Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com.
Hello there, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With us again this week, second time joining us on the podcast, is fellow editor of RedLegNation.com, Chris Garber. How you doing, Chris?
Good, Chad.
Good. Well, we're actually taking time out of the game tonight to bring a quick podcast to you. See that Arroyo's doing okay tonight, but our buddy Edwin Encarnacion's thrown one away. It's his first error of the night.
Well, Edwin, it was kind of only a matter of time. I'd like to think he's gotten a handle on some of his defensive issues, but that may be the kind of thing that plagues him. I didn't see the play, Chad. Was it another when Edwin has time to think, Edwin does bad things situation?
Of course. Yeah, I don't know. You know, you watch the guy play, and sometimes you think you're looking at the best defensive third baseman in the league, and then sometimes he throws one into the sixth row, and you think, let's get that guy in left field or something.
Yeah, he can really do some special things, but I don't know. It just has to be some kind of a mental block he's got there. But you think after this many years in the big leagues and all the different coaches he's had, somebody would have hit on a solution to it. So maybe something that we just have to live with Edwin, and you know the good plays and the good hitting will hopefully outweigh some of it. But
let's hope.
He's going to be the kind of player he is, yeah.
Yeah, one good note, I guess, here is that Willie Taveras took another walk tonight. He's, you know, his on-base percentage is now at least over 350. I'm not sure what it is as of this second, but I guess we keep our fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, I'll admit, and you know, it's only a weekend, but I'll admit to being pleasantly surprised with the patience that that Willie and Brandon Phillips especially have shown so far this season. I did not expect it, especially the way Brandon talked in the offseason. But I'll take it.
Yeah, it's funny. Brandon had that dumb quote we talked about ad nauseum over the during the spring about he didn't hear anything about on-base percentage, basically. And he's come out this first week and a half, and really looked patient. He's not been chasing as many balls. Maybe someone's gotten through to him that, look, you know, if you had a sort of a down year last year, wasn't as good as the year before, pitchers aren't going to pitch to you in the major leagues if they know you're going to swing at anything. Maybe somebody's finally gotten through to him. I guess we can keep our fingers crossed, but so far so good this year.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this morning, and I'm trying to think if it's something Brandon has done. And you know, not many games have been on TV here in Columbus, so I don't know if he's showing a great eye or if pitchers are pitching around him. And I don't know what that means. I guess that says something about Jay Bruce if they're pitching around Brandon, but either way, he's not making outs. He's getting on base, and that's how he's really going to be a valuable player for the Reds on the offensive side, is if he gets on base more than, you know, 320 on base percentage, which I think he had last year.
Yeah, definitely. If he can get on base, he, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we've talked about him being sort of an overrated player offensively, good defensive player. But if he can get on base at a little bit better clip, he still doesn't need to be batting cleanup. But yeah, he absolutely gives something to this lineup that they need. Hopefully, you'd think that hitting in front of Bruce and Encarnacion would give them some more opportunities to knock him in. Encarnacion's another one. He's actually leading the team in walks this year so far. He's been very patient, and looks like his swing's starting to come around. He just hit a blast last night for that grand slam. So, you know, fingers crossed, I guess, is the only way to put that.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how Edwin, kind of what player he's going to be. As a lot of people have said, it's you know, we've been saying, well, this will be the year he's still young. We've been saying that for 3 years now, and it probably is time for Edwin. This is his age 26 season. It's about time for him to make the leap, or he's not going to probably. So he's still, he can still be a really good player, just like he was 2 years ago. But he may turn into the next level, and he may turn into be one of those guys that I guess what I think we do sometimes is we tend to focus on what a player can't do. And, Adam Dunn's a textbook example, of course. But there are a lot of guys who, can do some things really well, and we tend to obsess on the things they can't do. Even Brandon Phillips is a guy who he runs well, he fields well, he hits for power for a second baseman. And, if he doesn't get on base, he doesn't get on base. That's a big problem, but it doesn't mean he's a worthless player.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and just to point to what you were just saying, I think at the end of this season, we've talked before about maybe, the Reds may think about moving Edwin. I think by the end of this season, we'll really know what we have on our hands with Edwin Encarnacion. This is the year for him to either really shine, or when you guys start thinking, well, he's maybe not going to be the player we all hoped, if not expected, him to be. So I think you're right on the money there, and I think the Reds will have a big decision to make at the end of this year, and how Edwin performs this year will really determine whether or not he's got a future with this organization or whether they try to move him for something, because they've got a lot of parts getting ready to hit the major league level that could fill that third base position.
Yeah, I think that's got to be the one position they're the deepest, is third base. It's a lot of different options, and they got enough guys that one of those guys presumably is going to pan out. So.
Yeah, you'd think so. When you talk about Todd Frazier, who's just crushing the ball so far this year, down in the minors, and then Chris Valleca, and you just got a lot of guys that could probably handle that position. That Encarnacion, I've said before, he's my favorite Red now that Dunn's gone, but he's gonna have to prove that they should devote third base to him for the next few years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is a year for him to put up or shut up, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm hopeful that he'll do well, and he's so far so good. And, so far so good defensively until tonight as well. I've been really hoping he'd make a big sort of push forward defensively. Now, I know you said you're not getting too many Reds games there in Columbus. You're getting a lot of LeBron James, I bet, though, aren't you?
We get a lot of LeBron James. We got a lot of Blue Jackets.
Right, yeah.
The Indians have their own channel, but the Reds have to share the Fox Sports affiliate here with the Blue Jackets and the Cavs. So right. At least for the next week or two, maybe a little limited on what we get to see.
Yeah, with the Blue Jackets and the Cavs both playing so well, too, that doesn't – a lot of excitement there, I guess, for those. You're not going to get too much Reds for a little bit. But I know you've been following it, and what do you think about Aaron Harang's performance there a couple days ago, the Sunday against the Pirates? Complete game shutout, 3 hits, 9 strikeouts, didn't walk a batter. Vintage Harang, huh?
Yeah, it absolutely is. He was dominant, and Harang is a guy who probably has gotten less credit for what he's actually done for the Reds than anybody I can really think of. And he's just, when he's on, he's an exceptional pitcher. And I don't know how many people, he's probably the best pitcher nobody knows about, just, for a guy who's had 4 good seasons as good as he's had. If he's back, this club actually may have a chance. Now, I think, you're worried about Edwin Volquez and Johnny Cueto still young, and Arroyo is going to be erratic probably. So, but if Harang can go out there and throw out dominant performances every other time, they're going to have a decent shot at least being in contention in this division.
Yeah, definitely. And what, I almost take it personally. I feel bad for the guy, and he probably doesn't feel like this, but it bothers me that Bronson Arroyo has made an all-star team and Aaron Harang never has. Now, I like Bronson Arroyo. I think for what he gives the Reds, I like having him around. He's an innings eater, at this point probably a league average pitcher, and there's value in that. But Harang has had several years. Obviously the year where he led the league in wins and in strikeouts and didn't get a single all-star vote comes to mind immediately, or Cy Young vote comes to mind, but I hate that he's not gotten that recognition, because the way you described it is the exact way to describe the best pitcher nobody's heard of, basically, or nobody realizes is an elite pitcher. And I'm really sort of, after that start Sunday, it looks like he might be back to that level. I'm really hopeful that he can do that.
Yeah, that's interesting, Chad. I didn't even realize that Harang had never made an all-star game. I mean, with you, I think if you went back and looked at All-Star appearances for starting pitchers, I think you'll find a lot of goofiness. I think outside of Nolan Ryan and maybe a couple of other really, really high-profile guys who might have made it, or guys who pitch for really bad teams but who were exceptional pitchers, it seems like the starting pitching spots on an All-Star team really go to whoever's had the best 15 starts that season.
Jack Armstrong,
you know, Atlee Hammaker, whoever it is, right, that's got 12 wins to break is going to make that team, whether they were, you know, and with position players, even the reserves, you kind of, it's kind of a career achievement thing.
Right, yeah.
The fact that you're hitting, you know, 320 at the break, really, you may or may not make the team. But, you know, with a starting pitcher, if you don't have 9-10 wins and an ERA under 3.5, you're probably not going to make the club no matter what.
Right, yeah. Well, there's no doubt about that. I point to it just in the sense that he hasn't gotten much recognition anywhere. But I do want to mention one thing you just mentioned. I was actually getting ready to mention the same name the other way. I just read an article the other day. I don't even remember what the article was about, but it mentioned Nolan Ryan. And, you know, he only made like 3 or 4 All-Star teams in his
Oh, is that right? I guess I'm completely wrong.
Yeah, in his 75-year career. It really surprised me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. I would have thought it had been totally the opposite. I mean, I know there's no fan vote, but Nolan Ryan was a really good pitcher on some really bad teams for a while.
Right,
I thought that he would have been the default choice.
It blew me away. I really was surprised by that. But that goes back to what you're saying. You know, it's difficult. Starting pitcher, that's not a good gauge necessarily for starting pitchers in terms of popularity. But it is a sense that he's not gotten the recognition that we feel like he deserves. And I think there are a lot of people that inside baseball that know what a great player he is. But maybe this will be the year. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, you're really right on about the Cy Young voting. I mean, that's kind of a joke, really, that he hasn't gotten any more recognition than he has.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, the big problem is going to be whether he can get any run support because, you know, he's got an ERA of 0.64 now after 2 starts. But he's 1-1, you know. So.
Yeah, what have they scored? They scored 5 runs in the 2 games, and I think 2 or 3 of them weren't when he was in the game anyway.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, poor guy can't get a break even from his own teammates. But just, you know, watching him Sunday, he was hitting his spots. He was efficient. He was striking guys out. It's the harangue we'd all come to know and love. He just wasn't right last year, so it's good to see him back. And he's funny, you know, to see if you've seen the pictures, obviously, but, you know, he's trimmed down. He looks a little bit different. We'll see. The other side of that coin is Edinson Volquez, and he's had, you know, sort of a rough start so far. And I guess, obviously, it's a small sample size, we always say. We don't want to get too worried yet. But after 2 starts, he has a 9.64 ERA. Now, let me just contrast it before you jump in here. He has a 9.64 ERA. Aaron Harang has a 0.64 ERA, and they're both 1-1 right now. So
that's why we don't look at wins and losses. Right?
Exactly. So, what do you think about Volquez?
Well, you know, and I wanted to look at this earlier, but I didn't get a chance to. I'm curious if you took Volquez's last whatever many starts, 15 or 16 or however many from the end of last season, cherry pick the numbers if you want. But you know, after the All-Star break and counting these 2 starts, I'm not sure how good a pitcher he's really been. I don't think it's just a slow start. I mean, I think he had a kind of, maybe it was a reversion to the mean last year, but he's starting to pile up some not so great starts here in a bunch. So, you know, I think he's still a talented pitcher. That changeup's for real. I don't, you know, that's not going to go away. So I think he's still got the ability to be a pretty effective pitcher, but I don't know that we're going to have, as we thought last year, 2 aces or 3 aces.
Right. Well, you mentioned the changeup, and I think that's why maybe people are willing to give him a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt, because you watch this guy, and he's got that fastball that pops. He's got that changeup that just, you know, everybody drools over. But the league may have, you're right, you know, the league may have started to figure him out in the later part of last year and on into this year. So it'll be up to him. There was a quote from Dick Pohl in the Inquirer this morning that, you know, the league's adjusted to him a little bit. It's going to be that what's going to determine it, be the determining factor here, is whether he can adjust back, is the way he put it, to the hitters. So he's young still. He has the stuff. So maybe that's up to Dick Pohl.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't David Weathers or Danny Herrera getting pounded around, where you think, well, you know, they've lost it and that's that, because they don't have that great of stuff. I mean, Volquez has his stuff, and you're right, it's about making adjustments. I mean, it's one of the baseball, you know, conventional wisdom, cliche, whatever you have it. It's true. That's what it's about. They make adjustments back and forth, and whoever can do that the best and most consistently usually has the better results.
You didn't just mention David Weathers, did you?
Well, I thought I'd do it for you.
Oh, come on.
We had a nice conversation, and you hadn't heard about Weathers in a little while.
Oh, the Reds are back to 500. You know, they're leading right now, chance to get over 500. I'm feeling good about things, and you go and drop David Weathers on me.
You know, you ought to just take it as a blessing because he hasn't been that bad yet this year, so I guess that means it's still to come.
Well, maybe, but or maybe not. You're right. He hasn't allowed a run yet this year, and his first two outings were pretty doggone good. Now, yesterday, the first game of the series against the Brewers, he scared me to death. He allowed a couple runners on, but he got out of it. So that's like sort of like a classic David Weathers hole.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
but you know, while we're on the subject of the bullpen, they've been remarkably good this year, and the guy that's really surprised me with how dominant, and I know you've not got a chance to maybe see him much yet, but you can see his numbers and you follow what's going on, four outings so far. Arthur Rhodes has looked like a young Arthur Rhodes, I guess.
Oh, you know, I did see him a little bit on opening day, and he just dusted the Mets down. I mean, it was nothing. He looked great,
right.
And I assume he looked that good every time. I don't know what it is with Arthur Rhodes. How he's doing that, if he's doing anything differently, or if it's just a small sample size, but he's got that really deceptive motion now that I don't remember him when he was a younger pitcher having that little hitch in his motion, but
yeah,
he's getting the job done.
Yeah, and you know, so far, obviously, we don't want to get too nervous about the guys that aren't performing too well yet, and you don't want to get too high on some of these guys that. You know, Rhodes had a pretty good year last year, but there was a limited number of innings, and the year before that he wasn't very good. So, but he looks good to the eye so far. I agree. How was opening day, by the way? I know you got to. Was that your first opening day this year?
That was my first opening day, and I'm glad I went. It's not under any other circumstances I wouldn't have wanted to sit in a ball game for 4 hours in the rain and 39 degrees, but it didn't feel that bad. The wind wasn't blowing, so it wasn't that cold. You know, speaking of harangue, he did not look good at all that day.
No, yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think he had two strikeouts. He threw 110 pitches through, five or six innings, and just all over the place. Didn't look like he could – it didn't look like he was comfortable ever out there. And I think the results were good, but I don't know that the performance was really that good.
Yeah, he was – again, that I was starting to worry a little bit. Oh, no, he looks kind of like he did last year. And then, of course, he comes out Sunday when it's a little bit warmer and looks a lot better. It looked awful cold. I know you said the wind wasn't too bad and it wasn't too awfully cold there, but it looked awfully cold on TV. My living room was pretty warm on opening day.
Yeah, I imagine. It's not often that I go to a baseball game wearing long underwear and jeans
right.
And four shirts and a raincoat. So.
Well, I've mentioned it several times on the blog and a couple times probably on the podcast that I've been to, I guess, six opening days now. This was the first time in the last 6 years that I haven't gone. But, you know, we always encourage people, look, yeah, sometimes it's cold. Sometimes it's even snowing. Sometimes it's nasty. I've been there when it's 75 degrees. But it's something I feel like every Reds fan ought to go and just experience at least once. It's an experience.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it was definitely the most interesting atmosphere and the most special atmosphere, at least since the 95 playoff game I went to against the Dodgers.
Right. Well, you went to a Reds playoff game? You're that old?
I've been to two.
Oh, wow.
A 1990 LCS game, and I went to a Dodgers game in 95, and I may have even gone to one of that Brave games where we got killed and Javi Lopez hit that home run. I think I was at that game.
Right.
Try to black it out, though.
Yeah, really. You should try to remember everything you could because we may never get to experience that again.
Yeah, exactly.
But I didn't realize you went to a one of the LCS games in 1990 against Pittsburgh. You were sort of a younger guy then, probably high school.
Yeah, I was a senior in high school,
yeah.
And we had it was a Friday afternoon. We didn't have any didn't have school that day for conferences or one of those things. And it so happens that Marge Schott had announced that day, or the Reds had announced that there were a few hundred tickets that went on sale the day of the game. And the story was, the official story was that they had come back from the Major League Baseball allotment. The unofficial story was that Marge had held them back to kind of do a number on the scalpers. Well, regardless, I went down there with my uncle and his girlfriend. We showed up at about 7 o'clock at the stadium, ended up getting about the ninth row right behind third base for base value, which at the time was $30.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's fantastic.
So, yeah, it was pretty great. You know, it was the game where Paul O'Neill threw Andy Van Slyke out at third base when he was trying to tag.
For some reason, I thought that's what you were going to talk about, because that's probably the most memorable play in that series that year. That and Glenn Bragg's making that catch over the fence there in that series.
That throw, O'Neill's throw, basically came straight at us.
Yeah.
Behind the third baseline.
That's fantastic. Good times. Those were the old days, seems like.
Yeah. That was, they came out and the Nasty Boys came out and finished the eighth and the ninth. I mean, that was the loudest, I think, maybe any sporting event I've ever been to.
Really? Yeah, that's interesting. And then, of course, in the playoffs again in 95, and, had some decent teams up until that time, and never would have guessed. See, 95, I was, I guess October 95, that was great. I was starting my last year of college, and I thought, man, the Reds have had some success. There's no way it'll be 2009, and I will have been married 10 years and haven't been back to the playoffs since.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so, would you? I mean, just you think about it this way. It's been 10 years since the one-game playoff against the Mets.
Right, yeah, that's like the highlight of the decade, and that it has been a full 10 years ago. It's impossible to believe. It's funny. Coming up on my 10th anniversary is the reason I was thinking about this, and I'm sure my wife will be really pleased I'm talking about our marriage on the podcast here. But not too long after we'd gotten married, the Reds traded for Junior Griffey, and I just, I thought, boy, things are looking up, here we are, 2009.
Yeah. Lost decade, I guess, at least for the Reds.
Lost decade, but hopefully we got a pretty good one coming up in the next for the next decade. I don't know. A couple more items before we. I don't know if I want to quit reminiscing about the good old days, though. It's fun to win, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
I barely remember it. Francisco Cordero, you and I were sort of on the same page, I think, when he was signed. Good pitcher, quality closer. A lot of money for a team like the Reds to spend on a pitcher like that when they could maybe use those resources a little more wisely. But we were all worried about him, not to discuss the contract issues. We've beaten that to death. But we were all worried about him in spring training, and he has looked, since the season started, he's pitched three games, got a couple saves. But it's not just that he's gotten the saves. He has been lights out. I mean, he's really been dominant so far. Did you expect that after what we've been seeing, or what's your feeling?
It's so hard to say. I mean, closers are when they go back to when they signed him. I thought he is, he's maybe not the elite of closers, but he's definitely an upper tier, a legitimate guy. He's not a Jeff Shaw guy who's going to be a top level closer for a year and a half and then fade back into obscurity. I thought he was a legitimate, major league closer. So I did kind of expect, that's what I expect from him, is to be pretty dominant when he does pitch. The spring training performance, it didn't really bother me that much, because I think especially for relievers, they're not in the same role. They're not ever pitching the same inning, the same situation, the same stakes that they have. And I think for the closers especially, they need that adrenaline. So
yeah,
I don't like to see him have a bad spring, but at the same time, I wasn't real worried.
Well, the numbers didn't bother me, except in so much as it made me wonder about, he had that injury at the end of last season and whether he was fully recovered. And, I was worried that he might not be ready to answer the opening bell just injury-wise, because clearly when he's healthy, he's a pretty good pitcher. He hit 97 on the gun at least a couple times last night that I noticed. So he was firing. He looked really good. If it hadn't been for an error by Willie Taveras, it would have been a perfect inning, really. So,
well, that's the thing. I think we've kind of got the pitching. We may have the havoc, but I'm not sure the defense is going to be there.
Oh, lots of havoc! Come on, you tell me you don't love the havoc.
It's kind of like going to the circus, I guess. Really.
There's quite a bit about the Reds' offense you could compare to the circus, certainly.
Yeah, it's entertaining, but I'm not so sure it's art.
Right, exactly. But you know, if you combine some of that havoc, like if Tavares keeps getting on base at a good clip and he still wants to steal his bases, if he steals them at the rate he stole last year, that's not going to hurt the Reds, that kind of havoc. It's this stuff like when the Pirates turned that triple play the other day, triple steal or whatever they're trying to attempt here, and quadruple steal. I don't know what they were doing, but turned into a triple play. That type of stuff, it just gives up outs needlessly. That's the havoc that we don't like. But, if Tavares wants to walk and steal his way to third, bring it on.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm all for, if you want to go with the speed game, you got to kind of take some chances, but you got to be smart about it. And I think, I don't want to blame it on any particular player, but I don't think the Reds have been playing all that smart. And maybe I blame it on the manager. I don't know. But they've been more reckless than they have been calculating in the risks.
They have been. Yeah, and I think you do lay that at Dusty Baker's feet. But I've also been worried that for all the talk about how we're going to be fundamentally better and we're going to do the little things right this year to compete, they've not been doing that early on. They've recovered from some of it, but that worries me a little bit.
Yeah, that little things talk, I feel like every team in the history of baseball has had that article written about them every spring training. They're going to be doing the little things right this year. But you're right, with this Reds team, they actually have to do it. I mean, they don't have Adam Dunn to bail them out of a three-run deficit or, Ken Griffey a few years ago. I won't say he was a great threat last year, but
right.
They can't nickel and dime themselves into trouble or out of innings.
Well, not to interrupt you, but the way I look at it is their margin for error on the offensively is so slim because really, this is not a team that's built to score a ton of runs. That they can't be giving up outs and they can't be doing foolish things on the base paths, things like that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and you said it better than I was trying to. And the interesting thing to me is the Reds have scored more runs so far this season than I would have predicted. And I think the one reason they're doing that is they're walking more than I would have predicted. And the question is that something the Reds hitters are doing, or is this just early season wildness from the pitchers they've been facing?
Right. Small sample size, or?
Yeah, I mean, if this is really a skill, I mean, if this is a team that's going to get on base at, a 320 clip for a team or something like that, and then steal bases and run around and have decent pitching and have decent defense, well, then that's a whole different story. But if, you're talking about guys up there just hacking away and everybody – your number three hitter having a .320 on base percentage, then you're not in very good shape.
Right, yeah. You talk about if Will Tavares gets on base at a clip he did last year and Brandon Phillips gets on base at a clip he did last year, and a guy like Hairston, if he plays like the Hairston that we saw every year except last year, and some of these guys, and Alex Gonzalez has never been much of an offensive threat.
You've had a long season.
It's going to be a long season, right. But, if there's a different team philosophy and – I wonder whether that's the case. I hope so, but Dusty's going to have to, I guess, earn that praise from me
because
of his anti on base percentage comments in the past. So
I'd love to say I was wrong about it. If that's how it turns out, and they can score 660-680 runs this year, doing it that way, great.
Yeah, there are different ways to win. I don't want to say the Reds can't win constructed like this, but we'll stay hopeful about that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess Joey Votto's kind of carrying them too a little bit.
Yeah, and he's still a young guy. It's a lot to put on a kid who coming off his rookie year, to have to really carry an offensive load. He's playing great so far, and he's going to be a good player. But, man, that's a lot to put on the shoulders of a kid like that. I don't know if he's – he's going to be a really good player. I don't know if he's ready to be sort of the straw that stirs the drink in terms, because he's still got some years to improve.
He definitely does. Votto's he's got an interesting way about him, and I'm still not sure what that is. He doesn't look like anything affects him, really.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
And he may be one of those unique guys who can, he just has such good focus on what he needs to focus on, doesn't care that he's, the man, doesn't make any difference to him if he's a rookie batting sixth or a batting third his second year. If that's the kind of approach and makeup he's got, and it's possible that he has it, well then, maybe he's right there. Maybe he's not the same player as Albert Pujols, but that early in his career being that central of the offense.
Yeah, you know, and I'm constantly looking for things to be positive about. And if that's another one, if you want to be sort of upbeat about something, you watch Votto, and he looks like a 10-year veteran. And he conducts himself like a veteran. And there were some quotes from, you know, for example, Jay Bruce, that, you know, just watching Votto has made him work hard and realize what he has to do to be a better professional. He's a very interesting young player in a lot of ways. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Alex Gonzalez. Any thoughts? You know, he has no hits so far as we go on the air tonight. And Paul Janisch started tonight, and in his first at bat, he got hit a double in the gap, and so he has now exceeded Gonzalez's hit total for the year. What are we to expect out of Gonzalez? The guy's not played much.
Is there any precedent for what he's done? I mean, he's missed so much time. He missed the whole season for. You know, he's had all kinds of different reasons, and they all are legitimate reasons that he's missed time. But, you know, he's also not a young guy. This isn't a 21-year-old guy who misses a season and a half and is right back at it. I mean, he's at the age where you lose a step, you're done. And, you know, his first season, Gonzalez ended up probably in an okay place production-wise. He got there in a different way than I thought. It was all power and no average, really.
Right.
But he was a decent player there the first season. I thought his defense was much less impressive than advertised.
Definitely.
I mean, he was advertised when he came in as really, they sold him as Ozzie Smith number two.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen it in his career. And the one thing that the numbers said, and I thought watching the games backed up, is he's really good at starting and turning double plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great skill, except for the fact, you know, the Reds have really a strikeout and fly ball pitching staff, so that it wasn't quite the greatest fit. Really,
right.
But,
yeah, the value of that is lessened with that type of staff. Agreed.
Yeah, and then, you know, now I don't know, the little bit I've seen this year, including opening day, there was a play on opening day where he made a diving stop, and everyone online and on the broadcast was all over it. And in person, that was a ball he should have picked up on his feet and been able to throw the guy out. So
I know the play you're talking about, and when they show the replay on television, you could tell it looked impressive, you know, in real time because you hear a hit and the guy's diving. But I know the exact play you're talking about. It was not as impressive when they rewound the tape on that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you're going to get from him. I you know, you don't want to make a decision on a guy based on 15, 16 at bats, but at the same time, he didn't have much to play in spring training. I don't know. Do you let him play himself into a groove, or do you cut bait on him? I mean, it's not like we've got Barry Larkin in the system here ready to jump in.
Well, you hit on one of the names, and then the other point that I was going to make here with respect to Gonzalez, and you said, you know, how do you know what to expect from him? And the two things I was going to mention with that respect were, number one, you know, he's not a spring chicken. That's what you mentioned. He's sort of an older guy now. It's not like he's 25 years old coming back from a year and a half or whatever it's been since he played regularly. But the second thing was, even before, he wasn't Barry Larkin. It wasn't like he was, you know, a stud shortstop even before that. So I'm afraid that everyone's expecting a little too much out of him. And you know, obviously, I don't think he'll hit zero for the year if he's playing full-time. But, you know, he may be one of these cases where what you see is what you get. He's not his upside is long gone.
I think you convinced me. I think you're right. I mean, what's the sense in holding out and letting him play through till you get to him being back to the player he is, which is a 255, you know, 320, 375 hitter? I mean, that's like buying a whole bunch of lottery tickets to win $50. I mean, it's,
right.
You may or may not be proven right, but the upside's not that great. So
yeah,
but you're right. Maybe it's better just to roll Janisch out there. You know, he's got the glove. He's probably not going to hit. And throw him in the eighth spot and hope for the best.
All right. Well, I'm not a fully paid member of the Paul Janisch fan club by any means, but, you know, he's going to be steady defensively, whether Gonzalez will or not. That remains to be seen because there's no way he cannot have at least lost a step or so defensively. And if he's not going to hit, you know, well, might as well throw Janisch out there because I'm pretty sure he is going to play tough defense. I'd rather have somebody that can hit a little too, and we don't have that guy yet. Maybe, you know, Adam Rosales, you know, some people have mentioned his name, but I don't think he's an everyday shortstop on the major league level.
It doesn't seem like. I mean, when they move a guy from shortstop to first base in Triple A. It's not a good sign.
Yeah. Well, he had some arm issues there at one point, which he evidently is over with. But, yeah, that's not good. That's not encouraging. You know, maybe – I guess Frazier's still playing shortstop, Todd Frazier. There had been talk that he might have to move off that position, but maybe he can handle that position in the future. I don't know. This year –
Well, what about Chris Valleca? That's the one I really don't know about. I've never really seen him play. I don't – you know, he's still at shortstop in Triple A, so I figure somebody believes he can do it.
Yeah, I've seen him play, and, you know, from just the limited time I've seen him, I'm impressed. He's not hitting very well so far this year, but, you know, that's a guy that I'd like them to see. If maybe by the end of the year this year they'll get a chance to bring him up, give him a cup of coffee, and we'll know a little bit more by that time. Yeah, but you're right. There's no Barry Larkin waiting in the wing, so, you know, I don't know what to do with respect to the Gonzalez issue either, but he just looks bad offensively and defensively right now, and it's just hard to watch.
Yeah, you're right. And again, there's no real upside. It's not gonna get a whole lot better than this. It's obviously not gonna be this bad, but it's not gonna get a whole lot better than this, even in the best case scenario. So.
Right. Well, I made a sort of a joking request on the game thread tonight to see if anybody had any questions they wanted to or anything they wanted to just discuss on the podcast, and there were a couple of them, but one of them, Y City Jim's asking us to talk about the Washington Nationals, and I just don't want to do that.
Well, you'd be the only one, because I have absolutely no idea what they've done so far this year.
Yeah, they've not won a game yet, as far as I know, and so there's not a whole lot to discuss. But
is that right?
Yeah, and they're actually purging themselves of ex-Reds, starting with Jim Bowden, obviously, a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Start with the guys who are under indictment and move on from there.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Who knows? Maybe Bowden will be back in Cincinnati soon. Dare to dream.
Yeah, great.
No.
The thing about Bowden is I'm not in the Marty Brenneman camp where I want to burn anything that he ever touched and salt the earth that he walked on. I mean, he was, you know, I hate to say, but he was what he was. He was an egomaniac who made some really good moves and some really stupid moves and pretty much wore out his welcome. But, you know, to pretend that he was the worst general manager in baseball history or the worst, you know, the worst thing that ever happened to the Reds, I think it's kind of silly.
I agree with that 100%. And I used to have this argument with I was really sort of anti-Bowden at one time. And until I, you know, was talking to some of my friends who were fans. One's a Yankees fan, one's a Red Sox fan, you know, from around the country, Braves fan. And they were all like, why do you hate that guy so bad? I mean, he's not the best GM, but, you know, he's middle of the pack at least. You know, he's got the Reds doing better than maybe they would with anyone else. And so I started thinking, well, you know, maybe I'm too close to it. And so I sort of got out of that Marty Brenneman camp on him. Marty enjoys getting bitter about people and really hammering on
him. Yeah. I always wonder how much of that's real and how much is tongue in cheek and how much of it started out as tongue in cheek and became real. And,
yeah, I would.
And vice versa.
Yeah, we still love the guy. I love listening to Marty, but until he starts, you know, hammering on his little pet issues, you know. but he still calls the game better than anybody.
The one that really got me, and I never heard the origins of it. I just heard it the last 45 minutes of the rant. But for some reason, Marty hates Phil Mickelson.
Oh, I missed that one.
And I have no idea why. But he can't stand Phil Mickelson. I think it's fantastic that a small market baseball announcer has a self-started vendetta against one of the two or three most famous golfers in the world. So I have no idea what it's about, but I find it very amusing.
And what does that have to do with Reds baseball? Who knows?
Well, if that was the criteria, there would not be very much going on in that broadcast.
There'd be a lot of Joe Nuxall dead air in there.
yeah, exactly.
Did you watch the Masters just before we sign off here?
Yeah, I watched all but the playoff. I was in Chicago for Easter, and then I had to go to the airport, so I missed the playoff. But I watched pretty much all the rest of the final round.
Well, the playoff was fun, but the whole day was just golly, that was just a classic day of golf. You know, Tiger and Phil's duel, fighting all the way back, and then Kenny Perry ended up blowing it. But I had a good time watching that. It was fun.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, I felt like everyone, it was one of those things where it reminded me of the Reds opening day where the ball fell in between everybody three or four times. I felt like everybody was in a position to win that thing, and then at the last second, everybody backed away.
Right, nobody wanted it, so.
Cabrera ended up with a green jacket.
Yeah, he completely backed into it. You know, the guy hits it into the woods on his first shot of the playoff, Second shot hits it off a tree and it bounces back out in the fairway and then goes on to win the Masters. I'll never figure out how he did that.
Yeah, you wouldn't think he'd get away with that. But.
No. I can't get away with that. That's exactly how I play.
Well, that's what I told my wife when Tiger hit that tree dead on. I said, oh, I've done that.
Yeah, when he was trying to hit it between the there, and I said, gosh, he's mortal. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I do that 3 or 4 times around.
Yeah, me too. Well, Chris, I appreciate you taking some time for us on the podcast here today. We'll get you on some more later. Hopefully the Cavs will finish winning the World Championship and the Blue Jackets will bow out of the Stanley Cup playoffs at some point.
I think the playoff games will be on whatever the league networks are, so I think Fox Sports may be clearing up.
Yeah, good deal. So you'll get won't have to endure Marty as much. Be able to watch you get to watch George Grand. That'd be good.
Yeah, it looks like George didn't make the trip to Milwaukee. I see Chris Welsh is clean shaven.
Yeah, Chris and Tom on the broadcast, and I'm really just I'm shedding a tear. I'm crying here, a solitary tear going down my face because George Grand is not there today.
Yeah, George is the nicest man in baseball.
He is. He's a fantastic guy, and he's a guy I'd like to, you'd love to talk to him. But bless his heart. Well, we'll leave it at that.
I think that's perfect.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you being on, and we'll check in with you again sometime.
All right. Thanks, Chad. Anytime.
Sure. Thanks, man. All right. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Red Leg Nation Radio Podcast. Thanks for joining us. If you got any comments or suggestions or concerns, send it to radio@redlegnation.com. If you got any criticisms, again, send those to chris@redlegnation.com. If you haven't already, go subscribe via iTunes. And thanks again once again to all of you out there in the nation. This is Chad Dotson for Chris Garber saying so long.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.